The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and welcome to another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday, the show of your spicy takes and our often even spicier opinions. With me on this week's edition, we've got a back. We've managed to wrestle her away from the MacBook. It's Charlie Williams. Hello, Charlie. How's it going?
Hello, everybody. It's been a while. I feel like it's been like at least 4 weeks.
I missed you. Where have you been?
I've been busy writing. We've had a very busy few weeks with races, especially Australia, which caused me to pull my hair out.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't exactly what you'd call a stress-free race, was it? Like, let's be honest. It was a bit of a hectic one. It's understandable. There was a lot of stories to come out of it. There's some stories that are still ongoing regarding Australia, which we'll get to, because one of the takes directly relates to that, having seen the list in front of me. So we'll get into that very shortly. But for those who don't know, because as I always say, every podcast is someone's first, this is the show where you, the wonderful WTF1 audience, will send in your hot takes regarding Formula One in general. It could be about a recent race, could be about a team, a driver, who knows? You send them in to us, and then we will evaluate that take and decide whether we agree or disagree on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 means we seriously disagree, where 5 means we seriously agree. As mentioned, any tweet, or any take, I should say, that is scored 1 by both me and my co-host, in this case, the wonderful Charlie, will go into what has now been called the sub-zero vault for the coldest and hottest takes of 2023, which we'll get to in December as a season finale of sorts. So, you know, try to avoid that. Or maybe you want to deliberately get in there. Who knows? As long as it gets a good discussion going, we'll have to wait and see. So, Charlie, without further ado, should we get into Hot Takes Wednesday?
Let's go.
Take number 1. It's from Tyler Smith at Ty Daniels 0161. And he says, F1 and the FIA need to rewrite the entire rulebook and specifically train professional stewards like referees in football to enforce it. But, wow. This is bold.
Good one to start with.
Nice and subtle, nice and easy one, just to bed us in. F1 and the FIA need to rewrite the entire rulebook and specifically train professional stewards like referees in football to enforce it. I must say, as a football fan, like, train professional stewards like football referees, that's not necessarily a great place to start recently, is it?
I'm not massive on football, so I can't actually give you an opinion on what the referees are like. But I swear, I'm pretty sure stewards are professionally trained anyway. I don't think, like, you know, I can just wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, I want to be a steward today. I get handed a rule book and they're like, look over a couple of pages and get to work. I don't think that's the case. But I don't think there is anything actually wrong with the rules, like, themselves. I don't think the rules are awful. Like, there's a couple things that I think teams find their way through, a couple of loopholes, you know, like the Alonso penalty with the jacks and stuff. But it's how they enforce them. It's how they enforce the rules that's an issue for me. The FIA are just inept and ridiculously inconsistent. And it's almost as if they just don't know the rules themselves. I mean, we did a video on this not too long ago, being like, do they actually know their own rules? Are the rules too complicated that they get to a certain point, something happens, and they just don't know how to enforce it? I don't know. I don't know how they fix the issue, to be honest, because everybody believed that Michael Massey was the issue after Abu Dhabi. And I agree, he made some shambolic decisions.
Absolutely.
And I do feel like it got a little bit better in 2022, but not, like, still not enough. You know, still over the past 2 seasons, we're still seeing these inconsistencies.
Yeah, this is a complicated take. Now, first and foremost, the FIA do pay their stewards. They are trained professionals. I just thought I want to establish that before we really get into this. I know many people in the FIA are volunteers. The stewards are not one of them. I do have a few problems in general with the system. I don't like the fact they rotate. I would like for them to go down the IndyCar sort of road where they have the same three stewards at every race, where at least, even if you disagree with a certain decision, at least you're not going to kick your toys out of the pram over inconsistency. Because my biggest argument has always been, well, what's a penalty? And it's going to be situations where you just don't know sometimes. And we've already had two big examples of that this season. Like you said, the Alonso second time penalty that he got, you know, what counts as work on the car. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the problem, Charlie. By the letter of the law, the stewards were fine. The problem was they had a gentleman's agreement with the teams that touching the car was deemed as work. So, and the problem is the handshake agreement fell apart when Aston Martin lodged their right to review because they pulled out all the video examples of cars being touched during penalties with no punishment given. So the gentleman's agreement that the stewards had with the teams immediately falls apart. I've always said they're gentlemen's agreements until someone stops wanting to be a gentleman. and that's the problem. Like, you've got rules, you've got directives, you've got specific notes that carry over from weekend to weekend, and you've got this sort of gentleman's agreement vibe with the relationship between the stewards and the teams as well, that, you know, they're not funded, they're shaky ground to have a foundation for a rule book. Look, as much as I, you know, agree that Michael Massey had to go as race director at the end of Abu Dhabi, because we were never going to ever stop talking about Abu Dhabi 2021, ever. Part of the reason he did what he did was because he had an agreement with the teams that they would prefer to see a race finish under green if possible. Now, that's no way a justification for what he did, but it was in the report that went into that incident afterwards that, like, no, he had an agreement with the teams. Try and finish a race under green if you can. And that's probably why he did what he did. He didn't want to see the entire championship finish under a yellow flag. Again, not the attitude that I would have regarding race control if I was in charge at the end of that race. The red flag was right there, especially given what we've now seen in Australia this weekend. The sport is prepared to throw a red flag to get a standing restart if it boils down to it. But that's the problem I have with the stewarding. I agree with you, Charlie. It's not necessarily the rules. It's how they're being enforced. It's the handshake agreements under the table. It's the directives that go underneath that. And then we all end up beating our heads against each other on social media or amongst us media folks and journos about, well, what constitutes a rule and what doesn't. That's the problem. I don't necessarily think it's the rule book. The other point I wanted to make here real quick is that after Abu Dhabi, the FIA wanted to follow the letter of the law more often as a result of what happened with Michael Massey. And the problem is that we're still seeing these handshake agreements like we saw in Jeddah and, again, to a degree, Australia, with the inconsistencies regarding what's causing a collision and what isn't. Because Carlos Sainz got a 5-second penalty, which Ferrari are now in the middle of their right to review of right now as we record this, whereas Logan Sargeant plows into the back of Nick DeVries's car in the same incident and is not punished and not even investigated.
That makes me so mad. Like, that is probably like that series of like penalty inconsistencies is what makes me like, is what, that's what damages the integrity of the sport. It's the FIA's decisions to not make decisions. Like, because in the middle of those two incidents as well, you also had Pierre and Esteban,
right?
You know, they were, Alpine would have been keen to avoid Pierre getting a race ban because he is only like 2 points away, and having a penalty for dangerous driving would have given him those two penalty points. But is that like, Is that fair? Like, should you be, why, like, I just love to know what's gone on behind closed doors, because have they gone in and said like, oh, it's, you know, it was just a first lap incident, it wasn't our fault, like, blah, blah, blah. And I just imagine like these conversations between the FIA and the teams, like, all right, we'll let you off this part, like this time, because we don't want the bans to come into play. Like, that's all I imagine in my head. And it's all this that right. we don't actually see, like, that could be, that could be, you know, creating all these different inconsistencies. Oh, it just, it makes me really mad. It does really make me mad.
For what it's worth, as a side note, I do generally get the feeling that stewards wave their hands of accountability if it's teammates to hit each other. Because I remember Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel had two incidents where they hit each other and the stewards just waved it off. So I think, again, that's another one of those sort of handshake under the table yeah. notions. They both agreed it was a racing incident, and it was like, oh, well, your teammates, you've both suffered enough, we're just going to wave this one off. I again, it's, where does that say that in the rule book?
Yeah,
like like Gasly caused a collision, he turned into his own teammate and put them both out. So I don't understand how that's not causing the collision. But again, that's, it all circles back to Tyler's original take. And I don't think the entire rulebook needs rewriting. I don't think the rulebook is entirely the problem, but I do think there needs to be a serious sit down and think amongst how the FIA has its rulebook, how it's interpreted, and make it clear to the teams and therefore to us as media folks. I would like to see the decision-making process more. I don't know if people are rugby fans that are listening to this, but when you have like VAR, for example, the referee and the people in the VAR room are talking to each other, so you can see the decision process that goes on. You can see the mitigation that comes into play. Now, I know we got rid of the team radios that go directly to Michael Massey as race director, but I would like to see more clarity in the rules and the thought-making process that gets us to this point, because there are too many hoops to jump through in terms of we agree to this, we don't agree to that. That's what I would like to see. So for the most part, I kind of agree with the take in general. I think I'm probably going to say four here, because I don't fully agree. I don't think the rule book is the problem. And look, no rule book is ever perfect. There will always be loopholes. There will always be mitigation in cases that don't apply, where you've got to, you know, maybe make a common sense judgment or tweak your rule book afterwards, because it will, no rule book will ever cover everything.
No.
But some training in the actual process and being a bit more transparent about said process, I think would certainly help enforcement and help us as fans who consume the product understand what's going on a bit more. So I'm going to say four. How do you feel, Charlie?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think I don't, like we said, I don't fully agree that the rule book needs changing, but something needs to change, and it probably leans more on the stewards. I mean, like, that aside, it must be a very difficult job to be a steward. Like, I definitely, I would not be holding my hand up to volunteer to do that job by any means.
I've said it in many, many walks of life, in this job and in football, as I'm a big football fan as well. Like, why would anybody want to be a professional sports referee right now? Like, you have to be perfect. Anything less, you will be destroyed on social media, accused of bias, and have death threats sent to your door, like Michael Massey was, which, by the way, is never acceptable. Please don't do that. And yeah, like I've said it before, football has issues with that, like Formula One does. But the problem is, you're not raising people that want to be referees and stewards, which is another part of the problem. Like, because why would you want that job right now? It's a circle of pain and frustration, which we could easily talk about for a whole hour. In fact, I might put that to our editors and say, hey, can we do a whole podcast on this? Because I could go for an hour on this if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
But we must move on. Take number two is from Ben Wooten. And Ben asks, his take, I should say, is that Lando Norris will replace Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin when Alonso's contract ends if they continue to improve the way they have done this year. Ben with the take, Lando Norris will replace Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin when Alonso's contract ends if they continue to improve the way they have done this year. Now, from what I know, Fernando Alonso, I believe, signed a 2-year deal with Aston Martin. So that's the end of 2024 we're talking. So maybe Norris in 25. Now, you know the contracts better than I do, Charlie. Is that possible? Like, how long is Lando tied down for until again?
I believe Lando's till the end of 25, but I'm sure Alonso's original deal was multi-year, but then I think he confirmed after that was like 2 years. But as far as my understanding goes, multi-year is kind of like,
it's a very vague term,
isn't
it?
When you're done, you're done. Like,
it's a very vague. I mean, multi by the pure definition means more than one.
Yeah.
So who knows? But I mean, generally speaking, I think the general consensus is it's a 2-year deal for Fernando. But the problem is that Lando is tied down for another year, and yeah. I don't know. Would Lando kick up enough of a stink to leave early, potentially? I don't know. I mean, I'm going to you, Charlie, because you're our resident McLaren fan. You know the vibe better than I do. Like, Lando's been very, very loyal and very patient with McLaren, who, you know, they had a plan to try and get back up to the top of the field. They're now saying maybe 2025 they're planning to be contenders again. Is it time for Lando to bail?
I think Lando would probably leave. I do think there is probably, I know we're saying that he's loyal, and he has been very loyal, and he has been very patient. But I think it gets to a certain point where he realizes that his talent is worth more than what he's getting given at a team. But I would very much doubt that McLaren will let him leave, or whether they've even put a clause in there to say that, like, to even allow that. I don't, you know, they're smart. They're a business. Like, they're not going to let a driver that we say this every time, is a world-class talent. They're not just going to let one of them go. So, I don't know. I don't really see this. My first thought, though, when you read out this take, was, where is Fernando going? Like, if Aston Martin are continuing to improve the way that they have this year, and they continue to improve next year, are we really expecting Fernando Alonso to leave when he's with a team that are at the top? Like, when there's another chance of winning a championship? Nah, no way.
No chance. This is the best car Fernando Alonso has had in a decade. Probably since 2013, the second to last year he was at Ferrari in the last year of the V8s. Yeah. Where Ferrari were fighting for second with Mercedes. Alonso's not had a car that good since. Like, all the years at McLaren and an Alpine who were fine, but they weren't, like, even, like, top two, top three, challenging for occasional wins or anything along those lines. This is the best car Alonso's had in the decade. And Alonso's made it very clear. He's got no signs of wanting to retire. He wants to drive into his mid-40s. And I can't blame him. He's driving as well as he has in a good decade and a half at age 41 right now. He's 42, I think, in July. Like, he's still driving incredibly well. He's got an excellent car that's second, third on paper, at absolute worst, I would say. I think they're better than Ferrari. I think they're in the mix with Mercedes. Like, this is jackpot for Fernando Alonso right now. He could not have fallen up any harder from where he was at Alpine. And Aston Martin love him. He's all over their social media. They know how huge a following he has. He's a team player now. You've got all the video because of him wheeling the tires back to the garage. They're getting the memes out of his forehead, and, you know, the trophy jokes we made off the Jeddah and getting his podium back. Like, everything is coming up Milhouse on Aston Martin right now. There is no chance I think Alonso's going anywhere, because there is no better opportunity for him. The only other seat that is guaranteed to be better, in my opinion, right now is Red Bull, and Red Bull's team is fine.
Yeah. God, can you imagine Alonso and Verstappen?
War. World War III.
Oh, it's not even worth thinking about.
No team could tolerate those two egos in the same roof. Max Verstappen has got enough to carry an entire paddock as it is, let alone adding Fernando Alonso, who we all know has got no problem getting his hands dirty in terms of, you know, challenging for titles and making, you know, trolley statements and things like that. We all know that Alonso is not what you call diplomatic about most of these things. So that would be chaos in of itself. Overall, I can't get there on this one. Norris has committed himself for the long haul, for better or worse. And Fernando Alonso is going nowhere. Lance Stroll's got the safest seat in Formula One. And why the hell? Like, we all know Lance is going nowhere unless he wants to leave. And why the hell would he leave the best seat he's had in Formula One? So, you know, as it stands, I don't see this happening. Barring... the only way I can see it even having half a chance would be if Lando kicks up a huge stink at McLaren about wanting to leave. And I just don't think he's that sort of guy. If he had to have known when he signed a 3-year extension that there was every chance it was not going to work out.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't know that, he needs to hire a better team, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to say, this is a borderline one for me, but I'm going to say two and say, silly seasons can often spring up out of nowhere. And that, I think that's the only thing saving me from opening the vault on this one. How do you feel about it, Charlie?
I think I am going to put it as a one, you know? The only way I see Alonso leaving is that possibly at the end of 2024, he wins the title and then he's like, all right, I'm done. See you again when I'm 50. Like, that's the only thing that I think is going to happen on Alonso's side. And with Lando, I don't see him making a move to another team unless it's a top team. And by top team, to me, I still don't put Aston Martin under that. Like, they're a top team this year. But sure, for me, like, a top team is like Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, because they've been at the top for...
consistently, yeah.
Yeah, for, you know, over the decades, rather than just like Aston Martin, who have just popped up to say hello this year. And I don't think that's enough to convince Lando to be like, right, I'm going there. So yeah, I'm going to call it a one, I think.
Yes, it reminds me a lot of Williams when the turbo hybrid started in 2014. They were terrible towards the end of the V8s. The V6s came around. They jumped up the field. We're up to like third with, I think it was Massa and Bottas back then.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, they couldn't compete with the big players and they just ended up slipping down the grid. So yeah, that could very easily happen with Aston Martin. Do they have the budget and the resources to keep up over two, 3-5 years, who knows? That remains to be seen. But that is also an intriguing part of what makes Aston Martin's surprise so fun, I suppose.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Our partner this episode is Athletic Greens. We all know Formula One drivers are great athletes, and great athletes have one thing in common. They take care of their bodies. Now, I appreciate the majority of us can't claim to be world-class athletes, but that doesn't mean we can't look after ourselves like we are. That's why I gave AG1 by Athletic Greens a try, because I wanted to support my immune system and sustain my energy levels. AG1 is so much more than a greens powder. It's all of your key health products in one. I take AG1 in the morning and it makes me feel ready to take on the day. It's just one small scoop of AG1 in a glass of water. It's that easy to cover your nutritional bases. If a comprehensive solution is what you need from your supplement routine, then Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to athleticgreens.com/WTF1. That's athleticgreens.com/WTF1. Check it out. Take number 3 comes from Soundbrush, and Soundbrush says, George Russell will be the highest scoring driver to not win a race this season. George Russell will be the highest scoring driver to not win a race in the 2023 season. Should I go first on this one? Because
I'm trying to wrap my head around it a little bit. So you go.
It's a fun one. Analytically, how I'm breaking this down is, first question, does anyone not in a Red Bull win a race this season? I mean,
no.
it's if the evidence of the last three races are anything to go by, we are probably now looking at a situation where only major shenanigans are going to stop Red Bull from winning any given race on paper. Now, to be fair, we have had decent shenanigans with one of their two cars in two out of the three races this season. We all know that Verstappen had to come through the back in Saudi Arabia, but even then it was the easiest comeback from 15th to 2nd I think I've ever seen. And then Perez went from 20th to 5th in Australia without breaking too much of a sweat, and probably could have had more off if it wasn't for the fact he botched his final restart. So... because Perez was dreadful in Australia. I'm not sure that's entirely on him. I would say Formula One works in strange ways. You will probably get one or two rounds a year where something completely crazy happens and a Red Bull won't win. I fear we've still not even seen this Red Bull at full capacity yet, which is doubly terrifying. I mean, depends on who you ask. If you ask George himself, he's like, oh, they're holding back, they're sandbagging, yeah. You know. They're still, they don't want the FIA to come after them, which, you know, that, I think that's cute, given he drives a Mercedes. but it depends. How many drivers are going to win a race outside of Red Bull? Because both Red Bulls have already won, so they're obviously exempt. You look at the rest of the field, you'd think Fernando Alonso would be in the driver's seat given the way the season's played out so far. He's had three podium finishes so far. Hamilton's had one, and then no one else, I think, has sat on the podium so far this season. So you need both Red Bulls to have a DNF. And if Russell flukes one, he's off the table. So does George Russell fluke a win would be my first question. I mean, how do you feel about that, Charlie? Do you think there's a chance there's going to be enough freakish outlier winners to start taking names off the table?
I don't know. I'm really like, this take has actually quite confused me. Like, my brain is working too hard for a Wednesday afternoon. because... like, everything that you've broken down so far is correct. It's exactly how I feel as well. But then you've also got a part where you consider George. If there is a possibility of someone winning a race, could it be George?
And if he does, he becomes exempt from the take because he's won a race.
Yeah. But I'm not 100% sold on that Mercedes yet. And I think it's definitely track dependent.
Agreed.
But you also have to consider George versus Lewis. If there is going to be a Mercedes on, you know, getting a race win, who says it's not going to be Lewis?
Mm-hmm.
So then it would be George as the highest scoring. It's very like, yeah, there's so many like different compartments into this take.
Right.
I don't know where to stand. I mean, Lewis currently is 20 points up on George in the standings.
Right.
So, I mean, if they stay that way, and neither of them win a race, then no, he's not the highest scoring driver to not win a race. It would be Lewis.
Yeah, all of what you're saying makes sense. I know it sounds confusing to you, but I promise you, this is coming out right. Like I said, I think question number one is, how many guys do you think will win a Grand Prix? We've already had two different winners, but they're both in Red Bulls. Will there be any more? Will Red Bull throw up enough of a crazy scenario where somebody else wins? And then if they do, who wins? And then who's left over? And then who's the highest scorer out of that? I think there's a reasonable chance this happens, is my overall conclusion. I think there's a good chance George Russell goes winless. And if he does go winless, given how consistent a driver he actually is, he was very consistent last year. Mercedes were rinsing the crap out of stonks memes for top five finishes that George Russell had last season for how consistent he was. In fact, I think he only finished outside of the top five like two or three times all year last season. So I actually think, weighing that up, there's a good chance this happens with George. If Merckx have the second best car, but not good enough to win, there's a good chance I think Russell could fit the criteria of Soundbrush's take.
If there's no Mercedes that win, do you think he's outscoring Lewis?
There's a possibility. It's close.
Where I'm unsure.
I think it's a very close matchup. I think it's certainly closer than the 18 points that the 20 points that Hamilton has on Russell now, but I also think it's not the 35 that Russell beat Hamilton with last season. I think it's somewhere in the middle of that. And I'm not sure which way I'd go on that. I think they're very close. I think they're very evenly matched, those drivers at the moment. That's the problem. So I can't believe I'm saying this. I don't normally break out this number, but I think I'm going to go 3 on this one because this is the definition of a could go either way sort of take. And it's a bit of a cop out. I don't use 3 very often. I don't like sitting on the fence with these takes because I think it's a bit of a chicken answer. But I also think that there's a lot of variables in this, and I'm not sure which way I'd go on that one. I think there is every chance that Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso could also be in this mix if they also don't win a race. Because I think there's every chance Red Bull runs the table and wins all 23. So I'm going to say 3. Charlie, feel free to join me on this one. I do not mind. I'm not judging.
I like chicken. I do like chicken. So I'm going to go with 3.
That's entirely reasonable.
My mind is like, there's just too many variables in this take that, you know, I think I can't call it. So I'm gonna nicely sit in the middle and be proud about that choice.
I know podcasts aren't normally a visual medium, but if you saw Charlie right now, her face was like one of those Sherlock mind maps you got when that show was on the BBC a few years ago, with all the graphs and equations going on around our heads.
Yeah, it's that meme. Meme. The ball. That is me.
That is Charlie right now. Bless her. That's part of the fun. I love it. A great take, though, I do say. One that prompts discussion. I do love that. Take number 4 comes from Drew Davis, Drew 647A on Twitter, who says, Aston Martin will end the season with the second best car, but finish 4th because they don't have a number 2 worthy of a seat in a top team. If only Kieran was here. That's directed squarely in one direction and one direction only. One more time. Aston Martin will end the season with the second best car, but finish 4th because they don't have a number 2 worthy of a seat in a top team. Let's not beat around the bush. This is clearly talking about Lance Stroll and his impact on this team. Like, it's interesting because it's hard to evaluate Lance Stroll so far this season for me because he came into the season injured, not ideal, came in with 2 broken wrists, a broken toe, and probably a slightly damaged ego as a result. But he still, I think he gained a lot of respect with people for continuing to plow on and finishing, what was it, 6th on the day. He was running about that same sort of area in Jeddah when his car died in Jeddah there, and then was 4th after the chaos of Australia finished. I personally think that's fine for a car that's 2nd, maybe 3rd best. I think them and Mercedes are pretty close. The sample size is still pretty small for me, but I feel like it's a bit too early to start condemning Lance Stroll. I must admit, I did mention this in the very first video I made for WTF1, where I was voicing over saying, hey, if Aston Martin get good, is Stroll going to be good enough to justify his seat? So we're starting to ask that question again now. Like, so how do you feel, Charlie?
I mean, if Kieran listens to this, which I'm sure he probably won't.
Run for the hills.
He knows that I'm not a massive fan of Lance anyway. But I'm going to say that car is definitely the second best. We'll start with that on that grid this year.
I think so too. Not feeling him.
And I don't think that's going to change throughout the season. But I don't think it will finish 4th. That would mean having to drop behind Ferrari at the moment.
That's true.
I think Ferrari's issues are quite deep. I think they're deeper than... I think they run deeper than what they're letting them out to run at the moment.
Right.
So I do, however, think that Aston could drop to 3rd and Mercedes could finish P2 because of those drivers. And it's not anything on Lance, but I would argue that Mercedes have one of the best driver lineups on that grid this year. Like, well, you know, and for however long, George and Lewis are just two very world-class drivers working. And at the moment they are working together to get the best out of that car. And I think that both of them beat whatever Lance can bring out of this car. But that isn't, you know, that's nothing to say that, that's nothing on Lance. But whereas Aston Martin are relying a lot on Alonso, I think they're going to owe him a good old back massage by the end of the season. I think Lance is a good driver. But in terms of ability, I just don't think he matches George. If we're going to put, you know, like Lewis and Alonso together, he just doesn't, sure. He's not on the same. And he'll probably pull off, I reckon he could probably pull off a few podiums this season, sure. But it's very car reliant and not talent reliant. If that does happen,
Kieran, please, like, if you're listening, spare yourself. Have some mercy. I think your reasoning is valid, Charlie. I think you're spot on. I think the take itself reads fourth, and that means by default falling behind Ferrari. Ferrari are a dumpster fire at the moment in terms of how they feel about their car. We put a short up on the YouTube channel where we talked about, but Carlos Sainz has been very candid about Ferrari's problems, and it's basically everything. I literally joked the other day that it's like David Moyes when he was Manchester United manager, and he said United have to improve in defending, attacking, and passing, which is basically everything. Yeah. And it's the same with Ferrari. It's like, oh, we're not as good in low-speed corners, medium-speed corners, top-speed, tyre wear, downforce. You know, like, anything else you want to mention, Carlos?
It's my scroll.
It's literally like the cartoon scroll that comes down and ends up rolling like halfway across your living room. It's Ferrari are not in a good place.
No.
They've had a dreadful start. Charles Leclerc himself has had his worst start to an F1 season since his rookie year, and that's when he was at Sauber, and we all know Sauber were real bad back then. You know, Ferrari are in a bad place, and that's the problem with this take. If you'd have said third, yeah, that would have been very interesting, because I agree with Charlie that Mercedes are probably going to be a threat. They will maximise whatever they can get left out of this flawed package. And I agree with Charlie that they've got the best driver lineup in Formula One. It's balanced. It's got a high ceiling. It's got a low floor. It ticks just about every box. They get along. Like, it's the best lineup in Formula One for me. Like, Hamilton and Russell are excellent drivers. They've proven themselves at the very highest level. Stroll hasn't really done that yet.
No.
And don't get me wrong, I think Stroll has been fine so far this season, given the small sample size we've had. There's not been enough for me to look at Stroll and go, oh, this is going to be a problem. No, that's not the case. But given the way the take has been written, to say that they're going to fall fourth behind Ferrari, Ferrari would have to have a phenomenal turnaround for them to end up anything higher than fourth, because I think they do have the fourth best car on paper at the moment. And even without that, their drivers have made errors. Leclerc put himself out in Australia, which didn't help. And again, the way Ferrari managed their team, Bahrain was shambolic. It basically cost Leclerc two weekends in one. So it's been dreadful for Ferrari so far. And I do feel sorry for Fred Vasseur to a degree, because I don't think it's his fault. I think he's inherited a donkey. So with all that in mind, I'm going to say two. Ferrari do have the resources to turn this around, but I don't think it's going to happen this year, is what I think. I think it's going to be next year where I think Ferrari might start making gains. I'm going to say two. I think it's an outside chance, but I don't think it's like slam dunk, no way this is going to happen. So I'm going to say two. Charlie, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think I'd probably sit the same. Had it been third, it would have probably been a five for me. But because it's fourth, I more disagree with that, because I just don't think Ferrari are going to get their stuff together. I also sent the take to Kieran.
Did you know?
I did. I took a photo of the take and sent it to him. And his feedback was, that's a beep disgrace.
I love that we got a live reaction. I was wondering why Charlie was giggling on the second video feed we have, and I was like, why is she having a laugh? I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there we go. We've heard it from Kieran as well. I feel like his is a strong one.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
A strong five. No, a strong one.
No, you were right first time. It's definitely a Jesus Christ, Charlie. We're going to sit you down after this recording and we're going to go through the scoring process again, okay? We're going to make sure we get this right, okay? Like, if that was if that was not a one from Kieran, that was about a minus five. So yeah, have fun with that one. This is a good one from Dan CFC21. I think he's a Chelsea fan. Who says Sergio Perez will be without a drive next season as Tsunoda will replace him at Red Bull, and Liam Lawson and Ayumu Iwasa will take up both AlphaTauri seats. There's layers to this one. It's like an onion. I love it. Okay. One more time from CFC Dan. Sergio Perez will be without a drive next season as Tsunoda will replace him at Red Bull, and Liam Lawson and Ayumu Iwasa will take up both AlphaTauri seats. There's a lot of levels to this, Charlie. I mean, how do you feel about it so far? Because let's try and break this down. I think, so should we go back and forth on this one? So let's go for the first bit. Will Sergio Perez lose his seat?
Okay, actually, my first point, I'm gonna interrupt that point. Or Sergio Perez will be without a drive next season, and they'll bring in Liam Lawson straight to the Red Bull instead.
Ooh, that's very high risk.
Do you think?
Yes, I do. Look, Liam Lawson is a talented junior. I don't think he's so good you've got to move out one of your headline seats straight away. Good. They didn't even do that for Max. And they had Max tied down from the time he was 15.
I mean, they did it for Max for like half a season.
A season and change. it's like Kvyat caused a big wreck in Russia and they thought, well, this is our chance. Perfect.
But if they did get rid of Perez, who are they putting in that seat instead?
They would probably break convention again because Sergio Perez got that job in the first place via bypassing the academy. That was the first time I think that Red Bull had done that since Mark Webber, where because Red Bull's always hired from within its own. They've always had the conveyor belt of either, you know, raising talent through the ranks and either promoting them to the top or moving them out somewhere else. Daniel Ricciardo came up that way. Max Verstappen came up that way. You know, Alex Albon came up that way. Pierre Gasly did, with mixed degrees of success of the names I've just mentioned. you know, so Perez broke convention because, like, they were umming and ahhing about wanting to keep Albon, and then it was right at the end of, I think it was 2021, I want to say, when we raced in Sakhir and Perez got that win, where it was like I called it the bar rhombus. Basically, when he won that race, they broke policy to bring him in the first place. They would never have normally done that, but they thought, well, Perez was too good not to bring in. I think that was the logic. Is Perez going to be bad enough to justify sacking him? Because I know if Kieran were here, he'd be all over this because he's been adamant from the start that Ricciardo's going to come in at some point, swoop in, take his old job back, and Red Bull will move into the promised land. And I've never agreed with that perspective. I don't think Perez has ever been bad enough to justify him losing his seat. That's the big stumbling block for me. And even if they were to let him go, are you putting Yuki Tsunoda in?
No.
I don't think they are. Red Bull could have to pick whoever they wanted. They got the best seat in F1.
Yeah, that is like, I can without a doubt be like, that's not happening. Like Yuki, and that's nothing against Yuki Tsunoda.
He's driving really well this season.
Yeah,
I
think he is, and he's a very solid driver. But I think that since entering Formula 1, something just hasn't come together with him and his driving like it did in Formula 2. And I do really worry for Yuki, to be honest. I think I've said it a few times that I think this is a make or break year for him. And although it's going as well as it can at the moment, I'm still not convinced it's enough for Tost and enough for AlphaTauri to keep him on, let alone make that step up to Red Bull. So that for me is like that part of that take is definitely not happening.
Well, I was going to say, I look at the other half of it as well, and I go the junior situation. Tsunoda, I think, has driven very well so far. He's scrapped for everything he can get in F1 so far this season, because the AlphaTauri is a clunker of a car. It's bad. The team boss has admitted it's bad. And Tsunoda's gone 11th, 11th, 10th. Now, his point scoring performance was not, you know, perfect, because he did wreck his new floor in practice, but he still got a point out of it in the end. And that's the first point AlphaTauri scored all season. You look behind him, and then you look at Formula 2. And, like, Ayumu Iwasa's leading the Formula 2 championship right now. He's driven very well so far this season. Yes. We have a nickname for him amongst my friends. We call him That Boy Nice. Ayumu Iwasa, because That Boy Nice. He's driving very well at the moment. And Liam Lawson, you know, has had a solid start to his Super Formula campaign out there. We wrote about it on the site that, he did something that hasn't been done since, I think, the 70s in Super Formula, winning on debut. That never happens in Super Formula. So Lawson had a near-perfect start to his life in Japan, and Iwasa is... If Iwasa wins the Formula 2 title, you've got to think he's front of the queue. But you're probably more likely to move on from Nick De Vries, who's not performed at Tsunoda's level so far this season, than Tsunoda himself. That's my perspective. So if you combine the fact I don't think Perez is going to lose his job, and even if he was, I think somebody else would maybe make space for him, the fact that I don't think they'll promote Tsunoda if that were to happen, and then the fact that I think there's a chance AlphaTauri clears the decks and brings in Iwasa and Lawson together. I think there is a possibility that could still happen. I'm going to go one here, because I disagree with every segment of this take. I don't think Perez will be out of a job. I don't think Tsunoda will get promoted, because I think Red Bull could get whoever they wanted to get if a seat were to magically become available. I'm not fully convinced that AlphaTauri will replace both their drivers either. And even if they would Lawson be front of the queue? Because you've got Iwasa, you've got someone like Zane Maloney who could potentially
a massive pool of drivers.
Maloney, Isaac Hadjia, Dennis Hauger, they are all in the mix. They are all strong in Formula 2. They've all had at least one good performance so far in Formula 2 this season as well. So there's a queue. There's a fleet of drivers behind them in Red Bull again. So with all that in mind, I'm going to go one, Dan. I'm sorry, buddy, but I'm going one on this one. How do you feel, Charlie?
I think I'm going to go two, because I'm not as certain as you are that Sergio Perez will be in his Red Bull seat for a long time. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's 100% certain. Who I think is going to replace him, I definitely know it's not Yuki Tsunoda, so I disagree with that part of it. And I do think that he could also be out of a seat next season, but who it's going to be to replace him, I don't know. So I think there's, like, you know, there's one segment of that I kind of agree with in Checo, but the rest of it I'm a bit like, ugh. So I'm going to give it a two.
And that'll do it for this week's edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. Some fascinating takes there. Some really good selections there from you guys. Thanks to everyone on Twitter who sent them in. Keep them coming. We'll be back again same time next week for another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. Charlie, what did you make of all of that?
Yeah, there were some really good takes. I feel like they're getting better and better every week now that, like, we've got F1 back, and they're getting a little bit more spicier.
Certainly wanted a prompting good discussion. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week for another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. Keep it locked in on WTF1. Follow us, of course, on Twitter at WTF1. If you want to follow us personally, you can at CharlieWTF1 and Dre_WTF1. I like the fact that people whose takes we've said on the show have come back and followed it up with me after it's gone out. I do love that. So please keep them coming. I love the discussions. They're great. I do genuinely love interacting with you guys on it. So do check that out if you haven't already. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an Orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.